Satversmes tiesas raidieraksts Tvērsme.
Professor Johannesson, it's a great honor to welcome you to our podcast interview Tvērsme. We are truly fortunate to have you join us to share your profound insights on democracy, independence, future, the rule of law, as the numerous challenges we face in safeguarding our fundamental values. Your distinguished career, ranging from your academic work to your leadership as a president of Iceland, has provided you with unique perspectives on leadership, history, and the complex challenges we face today. We have several questions, but the first one will be related to your time as president of Iceland. Could you share with us what has been the most rewarding or surprising experience during your time as president? How have these insights shaped your vision for the role of nations like Iceland in promoting democracy and justice on the global stage?
Thank you very much, dear President of the Constitutional Court, dear Irina. Allow me first to express my gratitude for the kind invitation to take part in the solemn ceremony, the opening of the judicial year of the Constitutional Court. It's an honor and pleasure, and I want to express my gratitude to you personally and to your colleagues and your staff, to the welcoming reception I have received here. And just to the people of Latvia in general, this is my third visit to Latvia in recent years, and I have always received the utmost hospitality and kindness. But you ask a big question there. I was president of Iceland for 8 years, for two consecutive four-year terms. It was a great honor every single day, with great responsibility, of course, many duties. Sometimes the days were stressful, sometimes you felt too busy, but always you sensed the great gratitude and responsibility on your shoulders. I can recall events like the 100th anniversary of Latvian independence, the commemorative events here in Riga and other parts of Latvia, and I had the honor of attending as the representative of my country, and other events like this. But if you really ask me what comes first to mind when I look back on these years, I must be frank and say that what I most thoroughly enjoyed, or what I most appreciated, was the unique ability to get to know your country and your nation and your society in all its different aspects. Of course, there were sometimes tough times for individuals who suffered, for us as a society, when accidents happened or natural disasters. We Icelanders live on a rocky island in the middle of the North Atlantic. I had to move forward my flight to Latvia because on the day I was meant to leave, the airport was closed because of hurricane winds. That's no big deal, but this is one part of life in Iceland. Other powers of nature have shown what they're capable of. During my presidency, we had a number of volcanic eruptions, avalanches, earthquakes. What is utmost in my mind is the fact that we had to evacuate a thriving fishing village. And I know that there were a number of Latvians living there after a series of earthquakes and imminent volcanic eruptions. And we understood then, we Icelanders, that unity is essential, and we could turn our smallness into strength. Overnight, we were able to find shelter for 4,000 people. Of course, we're not unique in this, but I think it's easier in a small country where everybody knows everyone and everybody's willing to help. And I realized then, as did my fellow Icelanders, that while we cannot control completely the forces of nature, we can control how we react. So we showed unity, compassion, resilience, and we tried to do our best. So these are the things that come to mind, meeting people all over at the presidential residence, at other places in Iceland and abroad, meeting my fellow compatriots, meeting my fellow Icelanders overseas, including here in Riga and other parts of Latvia. So this, yeah, like I said, this opportunity to get to know your society in this unique and honorable manner, that's something I will never forget. So, but of course, meeting other heads of state, that's something that you must cherish. And this feeling that you're serving your people, your nation, it brings great responsibility. Sometimes you feel, and you must admit, am I doing it well enough? Wouldn't somebody else do it even better? Why did I seek this office? Was it vanity? And am I the best one to be doing this? The responsibility that comes with a position like this is immense. But at the same time, opportunities. And I was fortunate enough to serve and leave when I wanted to leave. And now I can look back, share experiences, and hopefully continue to be of some assistance to others. And that's something you would cherish as well.
In today's rapidly changing world, democracy and freedom face many challenges and even threats. You have often spoken about the need to protect these core values, both during your presidency and in your academic work. What do you consider to be the most pressing modern threats to democracy and freedom? How can societies better prepare themselves to address and mitigate these emerging risks?
There are many challenges. I would say that one benefit from my background as a historian and a person interested in the past is the fact that, yes, we are in a unique situation today, but the world has seen many challenges throughout the past, throughout recent years, decades, centuries, millennia. So facing challenges is nothing new for us human beings, societies, nations. Challenges of today center, for instance, on the advance of technology, social media, the erosion of trust in society. We are blessed with the fact that everybody, almost, can voice her or his opinion. We can all be our own media. We can all say what we like, or even more, what we dislike. This is an aspect of human rights or the right of expression that we should cherish. You can hear everybody's voice. But with this power, with this freedom, comes responsibility as well. How do you want to use your voice when you have this opportunity? Do you want it to be a force for good? And if so, how is it best to approach this freedom that you have? I have said jokingly that as president, I have thought about issuing a decree or law, and I am joking. I must emphasize that at the very beginning. But this law would state that you would only be able to make one or two comments a day on social media, and you would be able to do 3 likes and maybe 2 dislikes. And that would be it. And the world would be a better place, because if we're always constantly online arguing, bickering, then maybe we are not using our potential, our freedom for good. But I reiterate once more that I said this half jokingly as a means to say that it's not the amount that matters, rather what you say on each specific occasion. Furthermore, we see that with the advent of supranational or international conglomerates and companies that can control social media, that can control what information we receive and what not, we face new challenges to democracy and human rights, artificial intelligence, and so on. So all these technological advances that should and can make our lives easier, happier, better. We can take an example. I can now even though I'm in Latvia, I can watch news in Iceland and I can converse with my friends and so on and so forth. Distances have shortened. But at the same time, it poses direct challenges to our fundamental aspects of democracy and freedom and diversity. Do we all want to sound the same, watch the same media, movies, listen to the same music, be fed by somebody who controls what we read, what we see, what we think? No, we don't want that. Therefore, we have to be awake. We have to be masters of this new medium, not to let that medium be our masters.
Drawing from your personal experiences, what key values, lessons, or insights would you like to share with future generation? How can we keep young people engaged in the continued development and strengthening our democracy?
One of the most pleasurable parts of being a head of state, being president in a country like Iceland, and as you think Latvia as well, is the ability to meet young people, to meet the new generation. Of course, it was also nice to meet the older ones, the ones who built our society, the ones who made sure that we can enjoy the luxury that we enjoy today. Don't get me wrong there. But seeing the young generation going to schools, let's take an example. You visit a school in some remote part of Iceland. You're well received. There are children waving the Icelandic flag as you enter. There's somebody who introduces herself and himself, maybe a girl and a boy, and they will say, we will escort you through the school and we will show you what we have done. And there are paintings and pieces of art. Then there will be some music played by some brilliant student on the violin or the piano or the guitar and singing. There will be presentations and you see these brilliant kids and you will say to yourself, I could never have done this when I was their age. But then look around, maybe in the background, you will see somebody who is not taking part, who is not brilliant on the piano, who does not have the confidence to make a speech, who is not lively, engaging, who is a bit shy. And we need to look at those kids as well. Maybe they do not need the attention of the president. Maybe they do not need assistance. No, they do need assistance. They are the ones who need a tiny bit of help to show what they're capable of. And we need to make sure that there is space for everyone within the schools and within society. Schools can be rigid. There's one rule for all. And this is the classroom and you sit and you study. It doesn't work like this for everyone. It was for many. I was a good student, don't get me wrong. But there were others who had so many good qualities that you could not express within the walls of the classroom. So let's just make sure, as we develop our society, that we have space for everyone. I'm not saying everybody should just do what they want. No, it doesn't work like that. But allow everyone to find what they're good at, because everyone's good at something. You know, nobody's good at everything, but everybody's good at something. So if your dream is to become, I don't know, a car mechanic, or your dream is to be a doctor, or a professional athlete, or a teacher, whatever. Find the way to make that dream come true. Then it's not only to the benefit of each individual, it benefits whole society. When you allow everyone the chance to show what they're capable of, then everybody benefits. It's tough and it's not going to work all the time for everyone. We're always going to be faced with the challenges of individuals who do not feel secure, safe or happy in our environment, in our society. But then it is our task to minimize the number of those individuals and make sure that we have the tools capable of helping them. So I am optimistic by nature. I know that if you open a newspaper, or if you read a news outlet online, you will always find distressing news. And with the situation in the world today, you will see and find horrible news. There is civil war here, there is hunger there is conflict there, there is war, there is poverty, there is unhappiness, there are crimes, and there are horrible crimes. But if you take an objective look at the situation in the world today and compare it to, I don't know, pick a year, pick Latvia, 1944, whatever, then you will be able to say to yourself, at least we're moving slowly but surely, with exceptions, but slowly but surely and generally in the right direction. There is less poverty in the world now than it was before. There is less hunger. There is more democracy. There is increased freedom. And let's just continue working in this direction. Let's not give up, because once we give up, once we become too pessimistic, then everything becomes that much more difficult. But our optimism must be based on reason, not blindness. And the more we work together, like-minded nations and peoples, like Iceland and Latvia, the likelier it is that we will stick together and beat the bullies. And that's what we have to do as well.
Now about the war in Ukraine, as you said, yeah, it's horrible things happening in Europe. And the war in Ukraine has tested the solidarity of the international community. Your experience as a leader during times of global crisis provides you with unique perspective. How do you evaluate the international community's support for Ukraine?
Well, from the day of the invasion, the nations of Europe have more or less stood together in full solidarity with Ukraine. I am looking here at, for instance, the Nordic region and the Nordic-Baltic region, where we have been united in our utter condemnation of Russia's aggression and our determination to continue supporting Ukraine. In Iceland, we opened our doors to refugees from Ukraine. Many came, some have returned. Others are welcome to stay for as long as they wish, and they have managed to hold on to their hopes and dreams and yet stay in Iceland. And we have provided humanitarian assistance. There have been controversial decisions. The previous government decided to fund the purchase of weapons, and there were Icelanders who felt that this was not something that Iceland, a country without a military and with a tradition of staying outside military conflicts as much as possible, should do. Conversely, you could argue that while we want to send humanitarian aid to Ukraine, we know that that humanitarian aid will be of no use unless there is military aid as well. You cannot only provide soldiers with gloves made of Icelandic wool if they are not carrying weapons as well. So isn't there a bit of a contradiction in saying we will only provide humanitarian aid and let others do the dirty work? That was also an argument. But by and large, Icelanders have shown steadfast support for the people of Ukraine. And we know that if aggression is not resisted, then the aggressor will grow in strength and determination. So while I do not have the answer as to how the war can end on acceptable terms for Ukraine, that is for the people of Ukraine to decide, I know that we cannot give in to the aggressor in the hope that all will be fine afterwards. It doesn't work like that. And unless you stick with the principles of national sovereignty and freedom and human rights, you are hurting yourself. I did say in my talk earlier today that Iceland, while it is a decent society, it's not perfect. And the same goes, of course, for Ukraine before the war. There were many things that were not as they should be in Ukraine. But still, that does not mean that we should just say, well, they have to just deal with their problems on their own. It doesn't work like that. We have to resist the aggressor, because who might be next?
Thank you. Lawyers like statistics.
Yeah, yes.
And how it can happen? You still remain very happy people. We know that you have strong wind, you have a lot of snow, maybe even a lot of darkness. But anyway, people are smiling, happy and proud.
Well, I know that it's almost written in the job description of a head of state, and I guess a former head of state as well, to be optimistic and speak positively about your nation and people and the society. And I'm happy to do that. I can say objectively that there are many criteria you use for measuring qualities of societies where Iceland will be near the top or at the top. Life expectancy, infant mortality, standard of living, level of happiness, as you mentioned. Although I must add that in most surveys, our good friends, the people of Finland, always top the happiness rankings. They're number one there. But I like the anecdote that when the Finns are told about this, they will say in their strong Finnish voice, well, that says a lot about the state of the world today. But we are up there with them. When it comes to surveys, happiness seems to be a fundamental aspect of Icelandic society. And again, I'm not saying everybody is happy there all the time. It doesn't, certainly not the case. But if you compare the situation of Iceland to the situation in many other countries, we can be relatively happy. Maybe one aspect would be the smallness of society. I'm not saying that is always an asset. It can have its negative sides, where everybody knows everything about everyone, and there is a risk of clientelism, sort of small corruption, if you like. Oh, I'm going to hire that person. I went to school with her mom or something like that. But we have a society based on principles and law, and we're moving in the right direction. And I think smallness can be our asset. Like I mentioned with the evacuation of the people in the good town of Grindavík a short while ago, I remember so well because it happened in an evening, in the evening, people were just had to leave. And all of a sudden you could see on Facebook and other social media messages popping up. I have space for four persons. I have an apartment that is free now. I have a summer house where 12 people can reside. And everyone did this. So even though the Red Cross put up emergency shelters, hardly anyone had to use that. And that is where the closeness of society comes in and becomes our strength. So maybe that is one explanatory factor of our general level of happiness. The weather, the darkness, again, jokingly, people have said that throughout the centuries, people have been living on this island for a little over 1,000 years now. And those who have not tolerated well enough the level of darkness, they have just, through generation and generation, vanished, as it were. And darkness can be nice. I'm sure that you have experienced that in Latvia as well. On a cold winter night, you light a candle, you read a good book, and you feel the warmth inside you. So dark winter nights can be very romantic and charming. Maybe that is one level of our happiness. And the summers in Iceland, if that is the right word, are short. And sometimes we say, like, you know, the fall came early this spring. There might be a very few days of sunshine. But then again, on those days, you really value and treasure. And having said that, in wintertime, half the population is in Tenerife anyway. So that's how we solve this problem.
As we near the conclusion of our discussion, we always like to end our interviews with a question that encourages reflection and forward thinking. As our final question, we always ask, what is your wish for the future of the Constitutional Court of Latvia?
I wish the Constitutional Court of Latvia all success in its valuable work. I've had the pleasure and honor of being with you and your fellow judges today and enjoyed our conversation, both lighthearted and more serious. And I could sense how dedicated you are to your work. And I wish for you to continue on that journey. We have two sayings in Icelandic that resonate with law and society. Með lögum skal land byggja. with law, the land shall be built. Laws, sound, fair laws, are the basis of civil society. Laws that are fair, and laws that are applied judiciously. It's no use having a fine set of laws and a fine constitution if it is not adhered to in practice. I guess you could see that with the Soviet Union back in the day. Brilliant constitution in some ways, but horrible in practice. So, with law, the land shall be built. And as the law speaker of the ancient parliament, the Alþing in Iceland, said around the year 999 or 1000, when he averted civil war by his judgment, he said, if we tear the law asunder, we tear peace asunder as well. So, respect for law is a fundamental aspect of society, and that law has to be fair, like I said, and judiciously applied. So my wish for you, as I bid farewell and look forward to returning to Iceland, but with the hope of returning to Latvia one day, is that you will continue your valuable work in the interests of all the people who reside in Latvia, with the determination that the law shall be fair, the law shall be fairly applied, and that law shall develop, because law will not be of anyone's assistance if it stagnates. Because even though you want the foundation to be firm and structured, law must develop as well. So I wish you all the best in your future efforts.
Thank you, Professor Johannesson, for sharing your thoughts and experiences with us today. Your insights into leadership, democracy, and the role of smaller nations in the global landscape have been truly enlightening. I hope that your words today will resonate not only with our listeners, but also with the future leaders of both Iceland and Latvia as we continue to build a more just and democratic world.
Thank you very much. Takk kærlega fyrir.
Satversmes tiesas raidieraksts Tversme.